Well, this is actually an exciting IA, and I'm really excited to have our speaker, our first speaker here today, and this internal affairs is called to order at this time. And I really want to just take a moment to thank Katrina McMurrin, who has waited all day for us. Katrina and I work very closely on the Nuclear Waste Strategy Coalition. She's the executive director, and she also wears many hats. In addition to being a former commissioner, she has such, I've watched her at so many different conferences, so many different forums give speeches on this topic, and she has really become the expert in the field. She can hang with the nuclear engineers every single day and teach them a lesson, as well as the attorneys that specialize in this area. So it's a treat to have her here, and want to apologize for just a long day that you've been waiting for us. And I know you probably thought we were going to be coming right after lunch, so thank you for your patience, and just delighted to have you here.
No, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, and I've seen these long commission days before, so I was prepared. That's tomorrow, not today.
Good.
I was flexible. I just appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's good to be home, both in Tallahassee and here at the commission. And if I may, I know that time is short, but I would like to add my condolences to John Williams' family and his work family, of which I was proud to be a part. We used to, work hard together and laugh hard together, and he definitely will be missed by a lot of folks all across the country. In fact, I heard from folks in Connecticut. I mean, it was touching a lot of people. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. It is really a family here, despite what some of us read. I'm proud to have been a part of it, so I thank you for allowing me to say that. And also, certainly nuclear waste has been an issue that's important to Florida, and we've been extremely fortunate that Florida has been such a leader on this, that as one of the founding members of the Nuclear Waste Strategy Coalition, which I'll talk a little bit about. And we've been particularly fortunate to have Chairman Round serve on our leadership committee over these last couple of years. And when Mark first proposed this idea to me, I said, well, she's certainly doing her part to raise awareness for this important consumer issue starting at home. So that's a really good example to set, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here and for everyone's support.
Thank you. Well, there's a legacy in Florida helping start the Nuclear Waste Strategy Coalition, so I do think it's very important to be engaged, and we do have a lot of spent fuel in our state. And so, we have the Office of Public Counsel in Florida, who's one of our members, and provides some good perspective. And Commissioner Egger was also very instrumental in helping me get involved in the organization, and it's just been such a treat to be among them. So, with that, you want to kick it off?
Yes, and I'll try to be, I know there are a lot of slides, you've all seen them in your handout. I'm going to try to zoom through them, and maybe if you all want to give me guidance about some part to focus on, that's of course fine as well. I will skip over, of course, this outline. As we've just been talking about, this was formed a good while ago. Actually, Commissioner Susan Clark was involved in forming this back in late 93, along with two other states, Michigan and Minnesota. In fact, Greg White, who's your executive director at NARUC, was around for that and has a lot of info on it if you want to chat with him about nuclear waste. At that time, even though that was before the government's deadline to start taking waste, it was already clear they weren't going to meet that deadline. So the idea was to try to bring a coalition of folks together from a lot of different entities and try to push the federal government to act as quickly as possible, and certainly to try to protect consumer payments into the Nuclear Waste Fund. So that was the overall purpose. I want to highlight some of the other areas there. I'll mention at the very end, of course, we're nonpartisan. We're not pro-nuclear. Obviously, a lot of our members are very supportive of nuclear. But we also have members who aren't that enamored with it. We're all able to work toward the common goal. So our membership includes those entities there. We have about 11 state commissions, 10 or 11, depending on membership renewals. We have three consumer advocates, including the Florida Office of Public Counsel, as you mentioned, energy officials, radiation control officials, a tribal and local government in Minnesota, and, of course, nuclear generating utilities and some that only have shutdown plants and some who have both. And some other subject matter experts. Our leadership includes three state commissioners from Vermont, Georgia, and, of course, Florida, and then two utility members from DTE Energy and the three Yankees. They have all shut down plants up in the Northeast. And then David Wright, a former neighborhood president like Commissioner Ecker. And they all try to keep me straight, essentially, and work toward.
Especially Bubba.
Yes. Especially Bubba. So overall, I think we provide a lot of value by having this diverse group and pushing toward a common goal. I think we have a lot of credibility because of that. We coordinate with NARUC and NEI, of course, have members in common with them, but also with Nuclear Infrastructure Council, Decommissioning Plant Coalition, anyway, the whole alphabet soup up there. I could go through any of them if you're interested. But we work with a lot of other folks is the main thing, NCSL included, that have different reasons to be very interested in this issue and work on it as well. We communicate messages to the federal government, and we try to keep members informed about a lot of different activities and give them a way to weigh in if they don't have the resources to weigh in on their own. So what is nuclear waste? Don't worry, I'm not going to go through some technical definition. I'm not really, despite Chairman Brown's great statements about me keeping up with the engineers, I'm not sure that's true. But certainly, I just wanted to highlight that there are different forms of nuclear waste. We also care about low-level waste, but most of our focus is on high-level waste, the spent nuclear fuel that comes from the nuclear reaction process. And the other high-level, there's some other high-level waste, even some government waste that all has to be permanently disposed. So they're treated similarly and have been, at least in the past, all destined to go to the same final resting place. But Florida is also interested, of course, in low-level waste. It just has a different disposal path, and we usually don't spend as much time on that. Used fuel storage practices, I think you all are familiar with this. Spent fuel pool storage is just like what it sounds. It has to cool about 5 years before you can transfer it to dry cask. Dry cask really should have never been necessary. They were only built because the government didn't do what it was supposed to. So a lot of fuel sits in the pools a lot longer than 5 years because they try to avoid the expense of the dry cask storage. But I think most utilities now, if not all, have had to resort to dry cask storage. And these are some pictures of dry cask storage or different designs. Some of it's stored vertically, some horizontally. Anyway, there's about 75 independent spent fuel storage installations in 34 states. So there's a lot of this stuff out there. This gives a kind of an order of magnitude, over 3,000 metric tons in Florida. Key things from the Nuclear Waste Policy Act is originally it called for two sites. Thinking there might be one in the west and one in the east, it created an office in DOE. But most importantly, what the 1982 Act did was authorizing DOE to contract with the utilities to start removing fuel in 1998. They did contract with the utilities. That has not worked out very well for them because they didn't do what they were supposed to do on their end and start moving fuel. The feed collection, of course, worked just fine. They collected from customers for many years. In 87, they amended the act to name Yucca Mountain as the sole repository site. This, of course, is very controversial.
And, Katrina, I'm just going to stop you to talk about the fee for a second.
Sure.
Though, so, as you said, the government has been collecting from ratepayers, constituents, taxpayers, for spent fuel. But those funds actually they don't go into a dedicated reserve.
No, as they were collected over the past few years, when they were still being collected, and we'll talk about that because a court case has ceased those collections, but when they were being collected, it was about $750 million a year, and generally that money was being spent on other things by Congress.
Yes, it was.
In fact, even when there was money being allocated to Yucca Mountain, it was nowhere near $750 million a year, so yeah, thank you. But we're going to make them accountable for that money that we still say is there in a dedicated fund, even though
it's not.
It's not.
Thank you. Thank you for highlighting that.
No, thank you. And the only thing I would highlight here is if Yucca Mountain's ultimately found unsuitable, there is a process to look at something else. I think sometimes that gets lost. There is a process for making sure that it's safe to put it there. So if it's not, we don't want it to go there either. But it so far has passed all the tests. There are a lot of milestones that were achieved early on. Back at this particular time, we thought things were moving at a snail pace, but now looking back, they got a lot of things done at this time. There was the whole Secretary of Energy recommending it, Nevada, exercising a veto under the law, and then Congress overrode the veto. That in particular is controversial in Nevada. In 2008, they, after doing a lot of work out at the site, they submitted a license application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And then in 2010, everything comes to a screeching halt. The administration zeroed out the funding. They tried to withdraw the license application that they themselves had submitted in 2008. They didn't get to do that, but essentially the work stopped. They closed the office in DOE. They said that Yucca was unworkable, which didn't have anything to do with science. They've never come up with a scientific reason. It's really just been political, and everyone pretty much accepts that, I think. So also the work at the NRC stopped. Things started to get better after the courts got involved, definitely NARUC, NEI, a lot of some states, some local governments had gotten involved and sued the government to try to get something done. They required the NRC to restart their work, which they've done. That led to the safety evaluation report, a supplemental environmental impact statement, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Commissioner Edgar. And they... But that's about all that they'll be able to get done. They were only able to use the carryover funds that have been appropriated by Congress. Until Congress gives them more money, which, of course, is also political, they're not going to be able to move past that. So we're hoping in 2017 that the dynamic may change a little bit with changes in Congress and leadership in particular.
I was going to say, could you elaborate? These guys love politics, and I think that they would appreciate the dynamics of the change. And why they're other than the presidential election, but who the key player here is?
Well, certainly Nevada has a lot of interest in this, and certainly the senior senator from Nevada has had a leadership position, whether he was in the majority or the minority. The story had always been that when new members contacted him, that they, you know, if they didn't want to be on the underwater basket weaving committee, they had to be there for him when he needed them on Yucca Mountain. I don't know that for sure, but that is the story. He's been able to use that influence, and he thinks this is important, you know, very important for his state to stop this. Now, some of us think that there's probably a way to change the conversation in Nevada. Some of the representatives on the House side. And by the way, this is shared by Republicans and Democrats in Nevada. This is not just about Senator Reid. He's just been the one that's most effective at doing something about it. But a lot of folks think, including some of the House leadership, that are really passionate about getting this moving, and some of the House leaders from Nevada have shown some interest in at least starting a conversation about what Nevada can get out of this. So if you can, incentives. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what exactly I was going to ask you. What has been put on the table for Nevada to get them to have buy-in?
Well, there were some kind of incentives, I would call them, I guess, in the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, but definitely not enough to, you know, to change the dynamic there. Now, there have been different polls that, you know, some people care more about this than, you know, than others, that maybe it's not important enough to really weigh in on some of the big Senate races anymore. So they're not sure exactly where the public is. But in general, I think people would say they don't want a nuclear waste site in Nevada. And it's been characterized as a dump and not really been associated with things that they could get out of it other than maybe some jobs right at the test site. It hurt Nevada when they closed Yucca Mountain.
But like New Mexico has been very effective at interim storage, at getting kind of without calling it consent, but getting the community and the governor on board with hosting interim storage.
Right? Yes. I mean,
so there are ways to do that, and you're going to get into consent-based.
Yes, I'll mention that a little. We're glad to talk about it whenever you'd like.
Please proceed.
And this is just, we already talked a little bit about the funding, so I won't go into detail there, but that shows the number of Florida contributions of 903. The allocation of interest is pretty substantial, as you see there, so we keep track of this. Government keeps track of this. Again, we're not really sure. Well, we're not going to let them off the hook with respect to this money that's still there. About $10 billion has been spent on Yucca Mountain already, but that leaves $30 billion-plus that have already been paid in by your consumers and others. So they've got money to work on Yucca Mountain and move the ball forward there and maybe even to do some interim storage and such, but they have to be given authorization to do other things beyond what's in the Nuclear Waste Policy Act already.
Can you touch on what those other things would consist of?
With respect to interim storage, perhaps, because now they're not authorized under the law to do that. But certainly there's a lot of interest, and we're also supportive of it, in having some interim storage, at least for shutdown facilities. So for plants like Crystal River, and of course in the Northeast, there are a lot of plants that have been shut down an awfully long time, where it's only basically the spent fuel storage installation surrounded by maybe gates and some guards, and they're spending a lot of money every year on just protecting that little area, and they're not in the waste business. They don't want to be in the waste business. In fact, as utilities, they want to go out of business. So they're waiting on the government, meaning the Northeast utilities, the Yankees.
So in those instances, and it may not be the same for each one, but how are those costs handled in many states? I mean, are those part of rate cases? Are they part of riders? Or I mean, how do other state commissions and other states address those types of costs when it's not an actively generating facility?
It is different, like in the Northeast, I think that because they're not fully regulated like in this state, it's handled differently. I think it's even a FERC matter. I'm not sure exactly how the mechanics work, but it is different in some of the restructured states because of that.
Pennsylvania?
I was thinking in Massachusetts and Connecticut, and it's my third state that I'm all of a sudden forgetting for my shutdown.
Illinois.
But I'm not sure, but Maine I think is fully regulated, so I think it's in Connecticut and Massachusetts, I believe, is different. I know that the representatives talked about that they it's also a FERC issue for them, but I'm not sure exactly how the mechanics work. Yeah, but with respect to those, they're looking for some kind of solution to get the waste moved off their site as soon as possible. And we're supportive of that because we think that even though we're also still supportive of Yucca Mountain and you have to have a repository no matter what, if you at least you can demonstrate that you can move this safely, that you can find some kind of solution, you can take this problem off of their hands, you know, allow them to use that land for other economic purposes. But I will say that there is a lot of difference of opinion about whether or not you should support Yucca Mountain or consolidated interim storage. People tend to want to put you in one box or the other, but we're supportive of both, at least to some extent. I don't think we're supportive. I know a lot of our members aren't necessarily crazy about the idea of moving all used fuel from where it's located to some central location. But particularly with respect to the shutdown plants, that seems to make economic sense even without doing any analysis because of how much they're spending on just watching it.
Is there interest, either scientifically, business-wise, or politically, or some combination of regional interim storage?
You know, some different ideas have come up about this. There's even been one that some congressional members have floated about having utilities, you know, maybe taking one of the shutdown sites and moving everything there. That's never seemed to get a lot of traction. And the regional, and the regional sites. I mean, I don't know that anyone's necessarily said that, but there has been a lot of feedback. For instance, in these efforts in New Mexico and Texas, you might hear people say, "Well, why are we taking all this waste? You know, most of the waste is generated on the East Coast. You all need to take care of your own problem. We don't even have any nuclear facilities in New Mexico, for instance." Not to suggest that those efforts aren't moving forward. They seem to be. But, of course, there's always going to be pushback. But just similar to what I mentioned about the Nuclear Waste Policy Act originally, about how they contemplated a site in the east and the west, perhaps, and two, it was an idea to maybe distribute the pain somewhat. But there's a lot of discussion on the interim side, too, whether or not it would make sense to have two consolidated interim storage sites, since there is interest in Texas and New Mexico already, and perhaps more as the government looks for other volunteers.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
I got a question. I'm looking at this map of where used nuclear fuel is stored, but the map illustrates that nothing's stored in New Mexico. I keep on hearing comments like you're making it sound like there is in New Mexico. Am I missing something?
No, you're not. There's nothing stored there now other than they do have some facilities for taking government waste.
Right.
But there's nothing there now because they have no nuclear generation there. And that was one of the meetings we had with the senator's office from New Mexico was kind of the question of why are you wanting us to take your waste? And of course we haven't taken a position on any particular interim storage facility in any particular state, but certainly are interested in seeing someone come forward and maybe being on board with the idea of taking some of this fuel, at least for the shutdown plants.
And there are developments in the state of Texas and in New Mexico where they've gotten the government, local government, state government on board.
Yeah, they've got letters from county officials and state officials, and You know, maybe nothing's nailed down yet, but some of them are moving forward. Well, actually, both of them are moving forward with license applications to the NRC. So it's real. They're putting up money, their own money, private money now, to move forward at least at that part in the process. At some point, they may be looking for nuclear waste fund money to support the interim storage. And that will probably be a discussion that you'll hear more about at NARUC as well. But at this stage, it's all private money. And there are some bills in Congress to maybe allow for these private initiatives. Some people don't seem to like the idea of a private facility doing this. Mm-hmm. We're very adamant that we don't think the government looking for volunteers should preclude these guys that have done all this groundwork and had people holding up their hand and saying we might be interested in doing this. We want them to keep all options open.
Could you go to the implications of the extended
sure.
storage? I think that's a very important thing. That
sure. We've talked about the amount of money, of course, paid into the nuclear waste fund, about how much was collected every year, the additional cost of dry storage, some other workarounds, security, et cetera. The taxpayer bit, I think, is probably what you wanted me to highlight here, because whether or not you receive power from nuclear generating utilities, as a taxpayer, you're sharing the burden of this problem. Because the damages to utilities are paid out of the U.S. Judgment Fund, which is part of the Treasury, and it's financed by taxpayers. So $5.3 billion already has gone back to the utilities to pay for the damages. And, of course, the utilities pass it on. It's different mechanisms in different states. But the utilities pass that back to the ratepayers in some form or another. I think they're using clauses mostly in most of the states. But that's already $5.3 billion. It's estimated to be over $23 billion by 2021. That's if the government were to be moving something by then, which is unlikely. So $500 million per year after that. So this is really racking up. This is, I think it's been an impetus for some senators and House members, particularly those dealing with appropriations issues and seeing this kind of hanging out there. They know that this number keeps getting bigger and affects what they can do with money coming in from the taxpayers, and so they would like to reduce this liability, but seem to be at an impasse. So, and then on communities with respect to, you know, wanting this fuel removed, not really feeling like it's safe where it is. I think the NRC has said that the fuel is safe on site for a number of years and a very prolonged period now based on their most recent rulings. But still there's some uncertainty about how long is this really safe. It was never intended to be here in this manner. And, of course, wanting to use the property for other purposes with respect to these shutdown plants. And also, just on society as a whole, there are some states that have moratoria against new nuclear if they don't resolve this problem. So these are some things that the executive branch has been up to. I'm not going to go through this list. Now, you're thankful we've mentioned consent-based siting, but they're looking for volunteers to maybe hold up their hands and say, we would like to help you with this waste problem, either on an interim basis, or if you're interested even in taking it permanently, that would be okay, too.
Now, Katrina, there's been some development on the legislative front. You want to share some of that,
sure.
please?
Sure, there are several bills. Again, I'm not going to go through this whole list. The key ones here, the Senate Gang of Four, as we've called them. These are some, as you see there, heavy hitters in the Senate. These are the energy leaders and the energy and water appropriations leaders in the Senate have worked on this for a few years now. It's a very comprehensive bill. It's certainly not perfect, but it has started a conversation on the Senate side. It's been important, and we understand from their staff that they'll be picking some of this up in some form next year, we think.
Have we heard that before?
Yeah, we have.
And before.
They, you know, to their credit, they see it as we've brought this up, but people don't agree with our bill. But, you know, there are definitely some issues in there. They get into a lot of detail about a consent-based process. They really have a poison pill provision in there with respect to liability for the utilities. There's some real problems with it, but they could work it out and move forward. But they see the world very differently than the House side. The House side wants to focus on yucca. The Senate bill does not. But
Senator Reid's not standing for re-election.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And Senator Reid will be out. Some people think that we're always going to have a problem with senators from Nevada. But he was in such a position of leadership, so it really is different. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of Democrats even on the Senate side that they are concerned about this issue too. They know it's important for their state. They just don't want to really roll over him in that sense. So it's been, I think that there will be a change in dynamic. At the same time, you know, there are a lot of things at play about how, you know, different parties see the priorities with respect to these issues. So we're hoping that the House, the ideal thing, I think, would be for the House to put something together that supports moving forward on Yucca and following the law and maybe working out some perhaps incentives for Nevada, which we think that Congressman Shimkus will do. He's one of the front runners for perhaps becoming Energy and Commerce Chairman on the House side. And he's very passionate about this. Illinois is a huge nuclear state and wants the waste removed. He put something forward on Yucca Mountain on his side, and the Senate continues to support consolidated interim storage. It may be that those things can meet in some form of conference committee if they can remember how to do one of those and and maybe work out a lot of the details there and have it where you can move forward on both fronts. That's what we hope to see. The rest of those. These are our key positions. We've talked about a lot of this. We, of course, support moving forward on Yucca Mountain and consolidated interim storage. Transportation is very important. No matter which path you see is the most important, we're going to have to move fuel there. So it's important to support that, and we really make sure that DOE is aware that that's a good place to spend money. And there's also a lot of efforts at the state level and the tribal level to prepare for transportation activities that people aren't aware. And I think it's important for the state and other governments to have a role in that, again, to be adequately prepared for any kind of emergency, et cetera. And I think to the extent more people knew that, that would be helpful. And then funding and governance reform are also key areas. I think we've kind of touched on funding. Governance is really, we would like to ultimately have the program moved out of DOE. Now, a lot of people say, why would you want to create another agency or another bureaucracy in government? And I get that, but one of the problems is it's almost impossible with all the changes in administration and that sort of thing to keep a program going and have the independence you need. You need someone really focused on getting the work done. And
that's failing at it.
That's right, miserably. And there's a lot of distrust, of course, of DOE. Even DOE is saying that we're okay with moving the program out of DOE. So they really have. They don't care how much money the government gives them, you can take it, right? Well, anyway, but... That's a bizarre development, but they are actually supportive of it as well. And then consent-based siting, which we've talked about, we want to make sure that consent-based siting has a real focus, that they want to do things that complement the Nuclear Waste Policy Act and actually lead to enforceable agreements, that we're not just, you know, having meetings about consent-based siting. We're actually moving forward to get volunteers and...
And that's one thing to highlight is that the government is having meetings on consent-based siting. Yes. I mean, they're going on around the country right now, and they've had how many meetings?
9 or 10
meetings. And they're going to continue, so.
Yes, absolutely. So I'll skip over my closing thoughts because I think I've probably shared them in one form or another, and there's contact information, but I'm glad to take any questions.
Thank you, Katrina. And commissioners, this is a really important issue. It's near and dear to my heart, and I find it just fascinating the work that the Nuclear Waste Strategy Coalition does, and I wanted to share it with you all. I think it's something that I spend a lot of time on in my free time. So thank you. And I know staff does have maybe a question or two for you here, and Mr. Hinton, he helps me out a lot on a lot of the presentations, and Casey, I don't know if you have any questions for her.
I have more than you want me to ask, but one, we were chatting about this earlier, it's probably a good thing to really explain in the setting is the distinction between storage and disposal.
Yes, I admitted to Casey that I worked on this issue for years, and I would use the terms interchangeably all the time, and I notice a lot of people do it. Of course, there's storage at the site, at the plant site, so we usually refer to that as on-site storage. Of course, that was never the plan, but anyway, there it is. There is storage, interim storage, as we refer to it. We've talked about like maybe these sites in Texas and New Mexico possibly coming to fruition and storing... So when we mean storage, we truly mean storing temporarily. And disposal, of course, is permanent. We're looking for a final resting place. You have to have it no matter what. You may have heard Commissioner Eccles or others talk about reprocessing as a technology that could help reduce the amount of waste. And it's fascinating. They do it in other countries. They're not able to do it here. It's very expensive. So it's probably got a lot, you know, a tough road to get to that. But there are some folks interested in it. But even if you reprocess, you still have to have a place after you reprocess for the fuel to be for what can't be reprocessed or what's left over. So in any case, you have to find a place for disposal, and that's what the law calls for. So while we support the interim storage, we absolutely can't take our eye off the ball to get something for it to be disposed of permanently. So, thank
Commissioners,
you.
Commissioners,
want to
jump in?
Sure. So just to clarify, yucca would be considered a disposal and not a storage.
Yes.
Is there a difference, and you maybe just said this, but what's the difference between permanent storage and disposal?
Well, I guess you could call it permanent storage. A lot of times we use storage, and it would be stored at Yucca Mountain, but it really is disposed. It's there. It's going to stay there, essentially. Now, the only exception I would say to that, the law does require, at least currently, require it to be retrievable. So I guess if there was some kind of issue or something, you can get into Yucca Mountain and remove them. Perhaps one day there may be some more value to this waste, and they would be able to retrieve it. But there are also, when you talk about maybe disposing in salt, there are efforts, well, the government disposes of some of it at WIP, Waste Isolation Pilot Plant. The government disposes of some of theirs in salt. That's a more permanent, you can't retrieve it in that sense. So there are different levels of permanent disposal, I guess I would say, but some you can retrieve and some you can't.
Have you been to Yucca?
I have, yeah. Years ago when they were still doing the tours, Nehru arranged some. Were you able to go?
I was. It was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Commissioner Petranas?
Yeah, I'm just looking at pictures of it. I guess this is a fully mature facility. This is not being utilized right now.
They still had work to do on it, but they did carve it. You know, they bought a tunnel boring machine.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many millions of dollars it was now. It was only, I think, used for that purpose. I'm not sure if they were ever able to sell it. A lot of the things that they used out there, they've tried to sell off to, you know, recoup some of that investment. But they've got a lot of work done, but they would still have to do a lot more. There are things like titanium drip shields that they're supposed to put in, which are extremely expensive. There's a lot of work to be done. But you can ride little train rail cars through it and see what it would be. And you get a good sense that there's nothing around that place. It seems like a perfect place to put it to anyone who's been out there. But there are also concerns about fault lines and things, and I'm certainly not qualified to say where it's safe to be and where it's not.
Any further questions?
Yes.
Yeah, great. Go.
Thank you. You touched on the lawsuit and the court decision that ultimately stopped further collection of the fee. Did that lawsuit address money that had already been put in for this purpose?
No, there was definitely no requirement to refund any of the money. There have been discussions about that, or different efforts to get money out of the waste fund for different things, like for instance for communities that, as we say, we never gave consent at Turkey Point, Crystal River, St. Lucie to become host to this waste that's still sitting there. There have been efforts by congressional members to say, let's take some of that money and reimburse those sites for having become interim storage sites.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing in the lawsuit, as I remember it, as I recall it, that would talk about refunding the money in any way. But there is a lot of controversy also with respect to whether or not they could restart the fee. The court was pretty clear that they need to have a program to restart collection. It wasn't necessarily a good thing to stop collection overall, because that meant you didn't have a program. And so, but certainly glad to see that the lawsuit prevailed. NARUC did a lot of work on that, made sure that they, if they weren't going to have a program, it's silly to keep collecting money from your customers.
So, as you've mentioned, and I know this commission was very supportive of NARUC and others who were pursuing that legal remedy. What is the role of commissions now?
Well, what we're working on at the Strategy Coalition, we've been we've come up with this idea to also start reaching out to congressional members when they're back in their districts. At this time, they've got these extended periods up until the election. I know you are familiar. So we're hoping that our members, including, and not just the folks who are, you know, on our calls and participate, like Chairman Brown, as you all run into some of your congressional members when they're back in the district, we'd love for you to make sure that they know that this is important to Florida and to you all. It's sometimes people tend to think of it as a utility problem. They don't think about everybody else that it touches as well. And so I think with commissions and consumer advocates like they are and other, you know, other entities in Florida, at times the attorneys general have been involved in making sure that congressional members know that this problem is out there and that a lot of people are affected by it as taxpayers and as electric consumers, that that's extremely important. So we're hoping, too, that if there's an opportunity to have a bill that would maybe move forward on Yucca Mountain or on consolidated storage, that all the members in Congress start to be more aware of this issue. The ones on the key committees know it, but some of the others do not. So, and there's been so much turnover, and there'll be new members, of course, soon. So if you all run into some of those folks and can let them know, we'd be glad to send them any information. So.
And we have materials and positions and things of that nature that we'd be happy to distribute.
Absolutely. But I appreciate your help.
Commissioners, any further questions?
Great,
Casey, you know you always have access to Katrina anytime you want. well, Katrina, thank you so much. I wanted to give you this for taking the time to come out here and just on behalf of us to show you our appreciation.
Well, thank you.
Well,
thank you.
She's going to be doing the road shows.
Thank you. That's so
appreciate
nice.
It. Thank you very much for coming out here.
Thank you all.
Be safe.
Talk to you soon. Thank you. All right, moving on to item two, which is the 2016 regulatory plan.
Good afternoon, commissioners.
Good afternoon.
Staff is seeking approval for the commission's 2016 regulatory plan, reporting on rulemaking in the upcoming year. A certification is required by the chairman and the general counsel that they have reviewed the plan and that the commission regularly reviews its rules for correctness. The plan must be posted on the commission website and the certification submitted annually to the Joint Administrative Procedures Committee by October 1, 2016. For each rule implementing a new law, the plan must include the date by which rulemaking will be initiated and the expected date by which a notice of proposed rule will be published. We ask for administrative authority, working with the chairman's office, to update the draft plan to include the actual dates that the notices of rule development are published and to correct any Scribner's errors as necessary before posting the plan.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions or comments on the attachments or the draft letter? There are three attachments. If there are no questions, I would entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. The motion passes. Thank you. Thank you for your work. All right. Moving on to General Counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of time, I have no report.
Thank you. I suppose Suzanne Morales is still on vacation after that two-week hearing?
I wish that were true, but we'll make sure she takes more vacation.
She deserves it. Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Commissioners, I've circulated before you is a highlight bullet sheet of our legislative budget request for 2017 and 18. At the top of the list, I can walk you through it. At the top of the list, you see our last year's operating budget of $25,029,000 and change. This year, we plan on filing, we're filing October 15th. We have three issues that our proposed budget will contain. The first you see is a net negative of $213,000, which will result from the elimination of general revenue funding for three FTEs. If you recall, there was, I want to say it was Senate Bill 272 back in 14.
Senator Simpson's bill,
exactly, that the legislature had given us three FTEs plus general revenue funding to fund them for the work under the legislation. Over the last couple of years, we've fortunately been able to manage our financial position well enough to be in a position to absorb the FTEs. and return the general revenue funding to the legislature, which I think right now is a prudent thing to do. And so there you see the $213,000 net reduction. Any questions on that? Okay.
You don't need approval, or?
Oh, still working on it. We're still walking through. The next issue is the non-recurring budget authority for our replacement for vehicles. We asked the legislature for budget authority so we have an ongoing budget replacement of vehicles, our inspection vehicles. We've got quite a few that are getting up there in mileage, so we're requesting budget authority to replace some of those. You can see there that's a $100,000 issue. And lastly, our kick-in for the state technology, the Shared Resource Center, has gone up, so that's a $10,000 issue. And that leaves us at a $24.9 million budget request for this coming year. We've been able to reduce it just a smidge, but at least it's going in the right direction, negative almost 0.5%. So we're proud of the work that we've been able to do on this budget request. And yes, Madam Chair, we do request
the gun.
Your approval.
I know, Commissioner.
We're trying to move fast, but we're.
I hear stomachs growling all around me. Commissioner Egger.
I would just say my understanding, and would like you to confirm if indeed you agree or not confirm.
Yes.
But this is basically a continuation budget.
Yeah, it's a flat budget.
With the one item that of perhaps a little more significance would be the fund shift of the three additional positions that we had been given by the legislature.
Correct.
Was that 1 year ago or 2 years ago? They all blur.
It was 14 legislative sessions.
Okay, so the fund shift from general revenue to our agency trust fund.
Exactly.
I will move approval at the appropriate time.
Now is the appropriate time.
I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Anything else, Mr. Brawley?
I have one last item, and it's a quick rundown of the Class C water and wastewater workshops that was just completed. You recall my telling you we were sending some of our talented staff on the road. Four staff members, Adam Hill, Matt Vogel, Charlie Johnson, and with the great Patty Daniel riding herd, went out into the hinterlands mid-July to mid-August. We had 10 workshops. Metropolises such as Eustis, Melbourne, Sebring, they held 10 workshops, as I said. They were recorded. The audio was recorded. We're busily putting together a video that's going to get uploaded onto the website for future reference. Tale of the tape, it was 47 participants representing 61 utilities, 54 of those Class C. That's really good. That's 54 out of 100 that we regulate. So those are pretty good numbers. We had some A's and B's there. And oddly enough, we had about 4 non-jurisdictional utilities. I wonder what they know that we don't. I don't know what the story there is. There was also a shame offensive that took hold because following the workshop in Tallahassee, which was the first one back in July, we actually had one Class C go ahead and file annual reports that were in arrears as far back as 2013, and went ahead and our staff actually helped them file a SART case. So, you know, yielding results on the first day. There was a survey component to this, and some of the things that the folks that attended found useful, first and foremost, was the legislative updates. These are small utilities, obviously, and they don't get the memos, so it's good to pass along the latest news and the latest changes in the laws, and obviously being able to interact face to face with the commission staff and to see some of their peers as well, other utility owners and operators. A lot of the questions, as you might imagine, related to like billing deposits and when do you have to return, particularly to renters and things like that. So that's, you know, the majority of the questions had to do with that, as we're told. But it was good to have that information out there. So now what's left to do after action, the staff is working on a number of items to be included now on the commission website. I mentioned the video presentation of the workshop material. There's also an update of material on the utility reference manual, which is the big book that gets circulated around to the utility owners. And finally, an update to the brochure that we provide to the new utility. To new customers. Forgive me. I understand staff's actually having a planning meeting either this week or next to go over those activities. But if anybody has any questions.
Any questions, commissioners? I think staff for all their work on it.
And they really did a good job. I think it was
productive.
Good planning on their part, Mark as well, and the recently Lisa Harvey as well had a lot to do with it. They all worked together and came up with a great plan, and I think it's no present plans to do it again in the near future, but it's something that I think we're going to wind up, you know, reheating over and over again in due course. So we're proud of that.
Thank you, Mark, too, for your help on that. On to other matters. Are there any other matters that we need to address today? Commissioner Graham.
Thank you. This goes back to the forever meeting that we had earlier. Bruce may mention something earlier, and I don't know if it's just a Hail Mary or if there's actually such a thing. He talked about monopoly abuse and a special proceeding. Is there such a thing? And if there is, what would that look like?
Mr. Hetrick? Ms. Helton, do you recall that conversation?
If I should turn this on.
And that's not my words. That was his word.
Yeah. We'll be happy to look into that, Commissioner, a little bit more, but we've had conversations with Mr. May over that. I think what was troubling in this case is there was no evidence before you, no information presented to us in the scope of this type of proceeding that was before you that gave us any evidence of that. There was allegations flying around, but no evidence. So it was never framed to come with you. There was an issue of law, which he was trying to get at, and we got at that issue of law. But this was not an evidentiary hearing. It may turn into an evidentiary hearing, and we may have evidence of monopoly abuse, but we don't have that right now.
Because I didn't see anything, and as many times as this come before as I hadn't seen or heard anything. But it seemed like it was hammered quite a bit today. And, you know, if there's real concern about... If there is a problem here that, you know, that needs to be looked into, I guess my question is, how does that happen?
And Mr. Hedrick or Marianne?
I'm not sure that I have anything to add at this point that Mr. Hetrick didn't say, but it's something that we will definitely look into and come back to you with if there's something that we think that should be addressed by you.
And let me add... two ways to get back to you. One is this proposed order will turn into a final order, and proposed agency action will turn into proposed action, which can be challenged within 21 days. If someone challenges that, that can turn into an evidentiary proceeding. There are also legal issues dealing with antitrust, monopoly issues that can be dealt with between City of Vero Beach and Indian River Shores. Those are issues between those, but you operate within a statutory scheme. There was allegations today that you have a presumption to deal with this issue because you determine the territory. You don't really determine the territory. You implement a statutory scheme. So it's not anything that the commission has done. So this needs to play out with the parties, and we're kind of stuck in the middle of it, but we stand behind our recommendations given to you, and there may be certain ways to get that back to us today in terms of a 120 proceeding, and if not, the parties can deal with it amongst themselves.
And I'm not trying to dig into anything. It was just something a question that was out there that I figured I'd ask a question here in IA rather than out there.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Graham. Comments? Are going to leave that one alone.
Let's leave that alone. Any other matters? I do want to recognize our employee of the month, who is actually one of my favorite employees in the commission, Mr. Jim Brennan, who is also the Gunter Award winner. He's been with the commission, as you all know, for 27 years. Just a tremendous employee, so instrumental and so much, so much of our policy and our regulatory schemes, including the nuclear cost recovery statute, the damage cost recovery, the storm hardening, implementation and development of all those. You're a leader in the agency. You continue to be a leader in the agency. And for that, we recognize you and just very proud that you are the employee of the month this month. And so when you get a chance, please congratulate him. Thank you. Yes. If there are no other matters, then we are official. No.
One matter, right? It's Ryan West. Okay, that is right.
Happy birthday. If there are no other matters, this meeting's adjourned. Thanks.